Welcome to the UK MSDN Flash podcast, Show 7, which includes an interview with Mike Orman talking about ASP.NET 4.0. This show is recorded on Friday, the 14th of August, and is a companion show to the newsletter published on Wednesday, the 12th. Your host is Eric Nelson, who is the technical editor of the UK MSDN Flash newsletter. All the links mentioned in the show can be found at bit.ly/MSDN podcast. Hope you enjoy it. Hello. It's August, we're all on holiday lots, we have beautiful sunshine and torrential rain, and we've got an edition of the UK Flash newsletter. That went out on Wednesday, and this is the edition of the podcast that goes with it. And in the editorial on that newsletter, I was talking a lot about some of the launches and RTMs that we did in July. So on July the 22nd, we released Windows 7 to manufacturing. And by August the 6th, we had that available on download for MSDN premium subscribers. On the same day in the UK, we also did a launch of Silverlight 3 and Expression 3. And that was attended by partners and customers who've been active with those technologies while they were in beta. And also, you know, analysts and other interested parties to, you know, see what we had. It was a really good event, lots of good feedback on it. And we also took the opportunity to interview a lot of the folks who attended. So there is a series of interviews you can take a look at and check out the show notes and you'll see the link to those interviews. Getting access to Windows 7 is covered in great detail at the Windows Team blog. But if, like myself, you're an MSDN Premium subscriber, you've probably downloaded it, you've probably found a machine and you've installed it. And I got to say, it's great. It is everything that I hoped Vista would be, plus more. And it's just working fantastic. And it's now running on every machine in my house without issue. So that's great. Everything's going sweet and well there. But we're developers, so we have to think about development stuff. There is a book coming out from MS Press on introducing Windows 7 for developers. I've had a look at the sample chapter. It's great. There's lots of information in there. The book's not out till later in the year, but keep an eye out for that one. In the meantime, I think one of the good resources out there is the Windows 7 for Developers blog. So it's part of just the Windows 7 blog, but there is a, you know, set of tagging going on there that takes you down to the development issues. And that's great. There's lots of information up there. Silverlight 3, you know, when we got that out the door, one of the nice things about it was Mike Tolte, my colleague in the team, was also one of those folks active in producing great screencasts, which are up on the Silverlight site, silverlight.net. So if you go to the learning section there, you'll see a massive screencast from a variety of individuals, including Mike, on how you can get started with Silverlight 3 development. Okay, so that's Windows 7 and Silverlight. What about Expression? Well, Expression Studio 3 is a major release, which has got lots of stuff in there, but one of the things in there is Sketchflow. And I was certainly very impressed when I first saw Sketchflow at Mix earlier this year. If you want to take a look at Sketchflow in action, I think the Mix video is a great one to start. It's a long video. There are some shorter things that have been published since, but I think it gives a real good feel for how you can use Sketchflow to take some initial ideas forward, exploring, iterating through those ideas until you get to ultimately a working prototype, which might be something that you show and then throw away and start again, or it might be something you carry on advancing. It's a very impressive bit of technology, definitely worth a look if you're playing in the world of XAML, WPF, Silverlight, etc. Good bit of news about Expression is that we had some limitations on who got access to the Expression suite for MSDN subscribers. I'm now pleased to say that all of the Expression suite is available to all MSDN premium subscribers. So some of the subtleties about that have now gone away. Fresh discoveries. Lots of different things in there, but I did want to point out two interesting bits. One is the tool shed. It's quite a crazy show. It's a long show, and there's lots of good technical information in that show. But they are so psyched and passionate at the start of that show. It is quite crazy to watch. Toolshed, I've pulled out episode 4, but do take a look at the other episodes. You will find things settle down. So if you get all buzzy there, you're sitting there thinking, crikey, there's a lot of coke being consumed in that room. And then you realize that actually they can actually tell you something useful. And episode 4 is very focused on tools. They look at Expression Encoder 3, Live Writer, Mobility Programming, Windows Mobile Marketplace, Expression Brain 3, and they've got, 4 MVPs all in there making that possible. Great show. Take a look at it. Lots of demos to look at as well. Now, at the other end of the scale in Fresh Discoveries, we have an MSDN Magazine article on building testable ESP.NET MVC applications. And it's quite an interesting article because it takes a look at using a bunch of technologies together to get the point where it's very easy to use test-driven development around MVC. So the technologies they look at are XUnit.NET, which is a unit testing framework by Brad Wilson and Jim Newkirk. XUnit provides a way to run automated unit tests. And, some people use MS-Test, some people use some other technologies, but he takes a look at, in that article, using XUnit. He also takes advantage of a dependency injection framework, and the one he's went for is Ninject 2 by Kit Kohari. Ninject provides a way to wire up classes into your application, and there's a good description of how that all comes together. And again, to help in testing, he uses a mocking framework, and he uses Mock by Clarius Consulting, that's MOQ. It's like many testing frameworks, it provides a way of mocking interfaces and classes during testing, so you don't have to execute every path through your code. Well, really, you want to test feature A, but it also has a dependency on feature B and C. Mock out B and C, test feature A. So it's a very good article, and nice to see that sort of stuff appearing on MSDN Magazine. However, talking about Fresh Discoveries this month would not be complete without also talking about Kodu. Kodu is a programming environment for building games, so game creation environment. What's unusual about Kodu is it's something that you or I can use, and indeed I've had some interesting play and managed to produce something that approaches a game in very little effort. But what it's great for is introducing your children to programming, because it runs on an Xbox 360. All you need to program or create a game is the Xbox 360 controller. Very impressive, and it's just 400 Microsoft points. So I'm not trying to sell you, I'm trying to say that there's something really cool to look at there, different ways of programming and getting kids interested. And it harks back to some of those days of Logo, like your little turtle running around, or even just those great days when you fired up a Sinclair ZX Spectrum or a ZX81 and you just started programming because you were faced with a basic interpreter, and away you went. Interesting enough, Kodu is built using Microsoft's XNA Game Studio. So if you're a C# developer and you want to go a bit further than Kodu, you'd use something like XNA Game Studio, and that's what they used to create Kodu. Go and take a look. Okay, we also have a poll, and last time around the poll was on which aspect of your job do you enjoy the most, and 31% of you went for solving problems, which is great. 21% went for everything, so I had a big list of things to choose from, but solving problems came first, learning new technology came third, effectively second, writing code fourth, and engaging with customers beat working in a team by 1%. Now, this time around, the poll is something a little bit different, because you actually have to sit a test. And, no matter what time you pick up this podcast, I would go and have a look at the results of this, because it was interesting, because it was based on the Joel test. So if you've not come across the Joel test before, it's 9 years since Joel Spolsky created the Joel test, 12 Steps to Better Code. So therefore, I thought it was fitting that, we'd include it in the August edition of The Flash. Essentially, 12 different questions. Do you use source control? Can you make a build in one step? Do you make daily builds? Right way through to, do you do hallway usability testing? Which, do you just grab someone and throw them at your code and see if they can actually use it? So there's 12 questions in there, and a perfect 12 is a great score. But few folks are going to hit a perfect 12. Now, Joel has a great caveat on it, which is he has come up with his own highly irresponsible, sloppy test to rate the quality of a software team. And that's what it is. It's highly irresponsible, sloppy test. But I actually think it's quite useful, and I think it stood the test of time pretty well. So the results are already coming in. And what was interesting for me is nearly 50% of the respondents are scoring 6 or less on the test. So there's room for improvement there. And only 4 people have scored a perfect 12 at the time of recording this podcast, and that's four out of, I think we've got, you know, a couple of hundred respondents at the moment. So hopefully we'll get some more respondents in there as well. So it's worth a look. It only takes you a couple of minutes to do. Fire in your result, and we'll keep tracking what the state of play for development is out there. Now, before I go into the interview recording I did with Mike Ormond, the last bit I wanted to call out was the user group. So we mentioned user group in each edition of the Flash. And the one we've went for this time around is the UK Service Oriented Architecture and BPM user group, SOE and BPM, all in one place. And if you go to sbug.org.uk, you can see all the great stuff on there. So they really are interested in technologies such as BizTalk, Dublin, WCF, Oslo, Azure, .NET services. So if that's something you're interested in, pop along to that user group. That's a user group that has a large online presence, as well as physically meeting up from time to time. Okay, that's me done on, you know, whiz through what was in the Flash. If you're not a Flash subscriber, take the time to subscribe. Again, the links are in the show notes at bit.ly/msdmpodcast. But now it's time for the interview, and I'd like to thank Mike Ormond for quickly creating me an article. I had a slight hiccup with the original author that we planned to do this, but Mike stood in and created us a nice 500-word article on ASP.NET 4.0 features, specifically web forms features, and I had a chance to sit down with Mike and find out what it was all about. I hope you enjoy. Hello there, Mike. How are you doing?
Hello, Eric. I am good, thank you. How are you?
I'm marvellous. I'm just about to go on holiday, and you're not.
That's charming.
It's charming, isn't it? So thanks very much for writing the article for The Flash this week, especially at short notice. And you wrote an article on ASP.NET 4.0.
I did indeed, yes.
And that's because you are pretty much Mr. ASP.NET in our team at the moment, aren't you?
I am Mr. ASP.NET, I think, probably in our group at the moment, yes, yes.
Excellent. And you've been looking at ASP.NET 4.0 and stuff like that, and you've written an article on specifically the new enhancements for web forms.
Yeah, it's a little bit confusing nomenclature-wise at the moment as to what ASP.NET 4 actually is, because traditionally ASP.NET 1, 1, 1, 2, etc. has always been web forms. And then, of course, we had the introduction of ASP.NET MVC into the ASP.NET fold, if you like. So we've now got these two different frameworks. We've got the Web Forms framework, we've got the MVC framework, and I don't think we've quite settled yet in terms of, if you say ASP.NET 4, does that mean the Web Forms bit and the MVC bit, or does it just mean Web Forms? So I'm specifically talking about the Web Forms part, but I expect that when we ship ASP.NET 4.0, we'll ship with MVC as a part of that as well, the second release of MVC, the second release of MVC, I expect.
Okay, so with that in mind, you've pulled out a number of different bits about ASP.NET for web forms enhancements. So where should we start? What's the first thing we talked about in the article? It was generated client IDs. So maybe if you could just start going through some of those things that you pulled out.
Sure, yeah. So I think you can sort of break this down into, I suppose, three or four broad areas. The first area here really touches on the, as a web forms developer, what is there in there as part of the platform, if you like, that's going to make it easier for me to write web applications using web forms. Client IDs have been, I suppose, a bigger thorn in people's side more recently, with the advent of a lot more Ajax, a lot more JavaScript on the client side, people using frameworks like the jQuery framework and the like, where what you want to do is some clever DOM manipulation, and that means you need to get hold of the client ID of the element that is you want to manipulate. And unfortunately, ASP.NET does this sort of client ID mangling, if you like, to prevent you running into naming clashes on the client side. So you can end up in ASP.NET with these relatively complex client IDs that aren't easy to predict, and you have at the moment in ASP.NET 3.5 no control over those client IDs essentially. So you have to do some jiggery-pokery by on the server side rendering the client ID so that you can then hand that over to your JavaScript jQuery code and do whatever manipulation you want. The idea in ASP.NET 4 is you can avoid all that jiggery-pokery and simply specify either that you want the client ID to be exactly what you specify. So you just say to ASP.NET, I'm going to take the risk here. I don't want you to try and help me out. I just want the client ID I tell you. Or you can, if you're using repeating data, so if you're using something like some form of grid or the like where there's repeating data involved, you can ask for a predictable client ID where you have some control over what that ID is going to look like. But those repeating elements then have either an incrementing index, or you can use part of the data that you're binding to provide that index into the client ID. So you get something that's easily predictable, but avoids the naming clashes and the repeating items. It's a big, big change, and it's something people have wanted for a long time.
Yeah, no, I've certainly had people come up to me and ask for that improvement, and it's great to see that we've got it coming up in ASP.NET 4. There's no plans to put that into 3.5 in any way?
Not that I am aware of, no. No.
Okay. So you said there's three or four sections for looking at the new stuff in web forms. Where should we go next?
Well, I suppose if you want to talk about, as we're talking about there a little bit about the JavaScript and Ajax being the drivers for this primarily, then I'm not even sure I did mention it in the article. jQuery, big, small change, big impact, I suppose. jQuery will ship in the box with Visual Studio 2010 / ASP.NET 4. So we've sort of embraced that lightweight DOM manipulation library, jQuery, which everybody loves so much. And including that as part of, including the jQuery library, not some Microsoft version of the jQuery library, is just the jQuery library with ASP.NET to make it easy to do that DOM manipulation type stuff. And it very nicely complements the sort of Ajax libraries that we've built as part of ASP.NET. Ajax that are now just integrated into ASP.NET, which are a kind of richer, deeper JavaScript library, if you like, for doing some slightly more complex, I'm going to get into trouble here, but more complex things on the platform. jQuery is a kind of lighter weight library that's really intended for primarily for DOM manipulation, visual effects, and the like.
So I know when we've done events, so I see a lot of buzz around jQuery on the internet, but when we've done events and we've been faced with ASP.NET, web forms, traditional developers, probably been doing it for a few years, and we ask for show of hands on awareness even of jQuery, it's been quite low. Is that your experience as well?
I think much less so now. I think jQuery has seen a real surge, or jQuery and the other frameworks. I'm only calling out jQuery here simply because that's the one we've chosen to ship in the box. But I've seen that they've seen a real surge over the last couple of years, and I think if we did that sort of show of hands now, there would be a much broader awareness of it and use of it indeed. So that's one thing from the JavaScript perspective, and then I mentioned ASP.NET Ajax and our sort of JavaScript libraries to support ASP.NET for doing clever things on the client side, and there's some big changes in that area as well. So I talk in the article about the client side templating abilities that we get with ASP.NET Ajax in version 4, and the data binding stuff, and the data context stuff for doing change tracking and the like on the client side. So basically, we're bringing a lot of the data binding stuff that you'd be used to as an ASP.NET developer server side, and giving you that same or some of that same capability to be done purely on the client, done heavily leveraging our libraries, done in JavaScript, so making it easy for you to do it predominantly in a declarative fashion, relying on the ASP.NET Ajax libraries to do the heavy lifting for you. There's some really clever stuff in there. It looks absolutely fantastic, and it's even got the smarts. So we, in the early versions of ASP.NET Ajax, the very early versions, we had this sort of XML scripting language on the client side. People might remember that, and that's kind of gone away, and we've replaced it with I think what's here is a much simpler ability to do the data binding, but also the components that we've built have the smarts to be able to, for example, call an ASP.NET Ajax web service, so something that's serialized as JSON, provide what method it is to call on that service and go and suck the data back and then bind that automatically. So you very essentially you can do all that declaratively and just say, this is the endpoint, this is the method I want called, and go bind that to this template over here.
That all sounds good stuff. And I'm just, as you do, rereading your article again and realizing there's some stuff in there that I didn't have a clue about. And one of them for me is the caching and the extensibility for caching. And that's also related to the work we're doing with Velocity as well. So can you use Velocity with the new caching extensibility?
Well, that's the idea. I mean, they've made a lot of changes in the caching, or they're making a lot of changes in the caching area, and some of them I'm not sure are entirely nailed down at this stage. But the idea is certainly talk of factoring out caching from the ASP.NET assemblies essentially, because it is more generally useful than just in a web application. It's a bit odd that if you're building a client application that you might be referencing some system.web assemblies. So they're talking about factoring out, that's kind of one thing. And then adding in this extensibility point, a provider model if you like, much like we have for some of the other platform services in ASP.NET, that will essentially allow you to plug into anything providing somebody has written the provider for it. So Velocity, absolutely, anywhere you like, into Azure, as long as somebody has built that provider. And I expect that we will create providers for the likes of Velocity and caching into the cloud via Azure as well. Probably whether we ship them, I most likely I think we'll probably ship them as sample providers on CodePlex or something. I don't know that we've fully decided exactly how they're going to ship yet.
Yeah, so certainly picked up the earlier bit of that conversation, which is around the refactoring bit. I've certainly worked with companies that have refused to use the caching stuff in system.web namespace because they thought there must be something really nasty or bad that would happen if they took up a dependency for their client side code on something that said system.web, and took some persuading actually to get them to use that technology. So that would be a good change. Okay, now. The other thing that is interesting to me, anyway, is what we're doing with web forms around routing and the prospect of cleaning up some of the stuff that you get in a web forms architecture on the back of routing. So it's probably worth explaining what routing is first and how that came into being before we talk about how that might help in web forms development.
Okay. So routing it came to being the driving force behind developing the routing mechanism, which already exists, in fact, in ASP.NET 3.5 Service Pack 1, is ASP.NET MVC primarily. So in creating the Model View Controller framework, there was a requirement for a much more flexible routing mechanism. And while they were developing the routing mechanism for ASP.NET MVC, there was a recognition that in fact it was much more broadly applicable and could be factored out of ASP.NET MVC and just made generally available to any ASP.NET application. So hence the routing aspects, it all gets a little complicated here, but the routing aspects of ASP.NET MVC actually ship as part of ASP.NET 3.5 Service Pack 1, and then you install MVC and it makes use of that underlying ASP.NET routing mechanism. ASP.NET MVC comes with its own this thing called a root handler, which is I suppose where the nuts and bolts of the routing mechanism operate. That's what you need to build in order to get routing to work. And the MVC team, the MVC guys, have built their own root handler to make that work. To this point, there isn't a WebForms root handler. That's what will ship in ASP.NET 4 with a few other bits and pieces to make routing work in WebForms. You can do it today. You can build your own root handler, but there is no shipping root handler from Microsoft that makes this work in the WebForms space. Now, all routing does really, well, I say all routing does, it provides a level of abstraction over the top of your application with the routing mechanism, the routing engine sitting in between, and that routing mechanism allows you to define a set of route patterns that will be recognized. And as you get a match against that pattern, so a request comes in, the routing engine fires up, tries to match that request against the set of predefined patterns, and as soon as it hits a match, it dispatches that request to the route handler. So in the case of MVC, that would be the MVC root handler. In the case of ASP.NET 4, if you're doing it with WebForms, it would be the WebForms root handler. And that then decides how to service that request, what HTTP handler is going to service that request for you.
Okay. So it sounds like you would end up with a much cleaner set of URLs to navigate and move around an application than what we're traditionally used to with WebForms.
Yeah, there's I suppose, a number of benefits to it. But one of the most obvious, most visible benefits is a nice, clean URL structure. So you can have a much more sort of restful, SEO-friendly URLs. You don't necessarily have to have an ASPX extension on the page, for example, because the root handler can take care of all that mapping for you. And it gives you this level of abstraction, so you can do clever things in between in terms of extracting data from the root and possibly manipulating that data, possibly applying constraints to that data, all sorts of things you can do before that request actually gets dispatched to the handler that's going to deal with it.
So all this stuff that we're talking about in ASP.NET 4, is that all in the beta 1 that's available out there at the moment of Visual Studio 2010?
All the stuff we've talked about so far, yes, is in there. There aren't, as far as I'm aware, there aren't any providers for extending
the caching
stuff, but the extensibility points are there, so you can start, you can play with that by hooking into that mechanism.
Okay, so if someone wanted to explore some of these technologies in more detail, now I know the article's got some great links to some detailed blog posts that you did. You've also got a link to a white paper, and that's a fairly detailed white paper, isn't it?
Yeah, the white paper is very good, as is the documentation on MSDN, actually. And there is some overlap between those two, but they're both very good, very detailed, and take you through this in a very logical way, and also provide plenty of examples to show it in action.
Okay. And your experiences with using ASP.NET 4 in Visual Studio 2010 Beta 1, has it been stable? Have you had lots of issues? Where's it been for you?
It's been pretty good, actually. The pre-Beta 1 builds that we had access to, there were a few problems, and in particular the editor, because there's some big changes in that space. So I don't think this is exclusive to ASP.NET. It applies more to code editing in VS. Prior to Beta 1, it was a little unstable. I found Beta 1 to be pretty good, actually. And of course, we've got the multi-targeting capability in Visual Studio 2010 that you see in Visual Studio 2008, obviously extended a little bit more into the .NET 4 world. So you can still build ASP.NET 2.0, ASP.NET 3.5 applications in Visual Studio 2010, as well as ASP.NET 4 apps. So I found it to be pretty good.
No, I've not done any real web dev for quite a few years now. What's it like doing JavaScript development in our tools at the moment? Has that come on a long way? So I'm thinking about ASP.NET 2 days as the last time I tried doing serious web dev.
Yes, so since ASP.NET 2, certainly, since we embraced Ajax and produced the ASP.NET Ajax platform, there's it really exposed the fact that Visual Studio's support of JavaScript editing, building JavaScript libraries, was somewhat limited. We've always actually had reasonably good debugging support in there, but that as well has been much enhanced. So, Visual Studio 2008's JavaScript support is actually very good. Where it falls down a bit is when you get libraries the likes of jQuery, which are using, they're reasonably heavyweight and using some quite clever JavaScript constructs. The IntelliSense in Visual Studio begins to grind to a halt, not really understand, be able to figure out what's going on. And that's a real area of focus for the team in 2010, is to ensure that we play well with those libraries. Now, if you're using 2008 today, actually, we have a Visual Studio jQuery enhancement documentation library, if you like. You can bring in and get good IntelliSense support, including IntelliSense against all the various jQuery functions. But what you get in 2010 is sort of almost that level of support without having to bring in any library or anything. We just can parse the jQuery library and extract all the information we need in order to give you a good quality IntelliSense. And the same goes, obviously, if you are writing complex JavaScript libraries with those clever constructs in them, then you'll get that same level of IntelliSense from 2010 that perhaps you didn't see in 2008, where the IntelliSense engine would fail on you.
Yeah, it's interesting for me watching how much JavaScript pops up in lots of different places now. Only yesterday I was listening to a podcast about, of all things, CouchDB, which is an alternative to an RDBMS for working with data. And they have a model in CouchDB for delivering applications straight out of the database. And guess what? Those applications are JavaScript applications. So it does pop up in the most unusual places now, JavaScript. It seems to be becoming a very common and popular way of building application code.
Well, yeah. I suppose in a web world, it's always been there, and its resurgence in recent years has really been around these very smart libraries for DOM manipulation, the likes of jQuery, and obviously the Ajax XML HTTP request, and being able to do lots of client-side processing without having to do postbacks to the server. It's really driven that JavaScript, I suppose, the community embracing it all over again in order to get those that nice user experience that perhaps was a little lacking a few years ago.
Okay, thanks for that. That was a great summary, but I can't let you go without asking you the one question that seems to pop up a lot. Which are you, MVC or web forms?
Oh, that's a really tough question for me, because I obviously sort of come from a web forms background, but there's a huge amount in MVC that is very appealing. And initially, I must admit, I was a bit skeptical on the MVC front, because Visual Studio didn't do that much to help you scaffold stuff. Things have got a lot better in that area, and I would be very tempted, were I about to go and set off and build an app tomorrow, I would be very tempted to go down the MVC route just for the experience of doing it. Clearly, one lends itself better to certain types of applications than the other. But I think where I am today is, if it was an equal shot for each of them, I'd be tempted to have a go with MVC myself, just to get the experience of doing it.
Okay. Thanks very much, sir, Mike. Much appreciated. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You are very welcome, Eric, and you do the same, and have a nice holiday while I'm stuck at work.
Oh, I will. Thank you very much.